If you're anything like me, at some point in your life, you've probably imagined having a clone. You know, a copy of yourself.
Copy of yourself.
Someone to do the laundry and cook dinner while you kick back to drink Mai Tais and rewatch Mad Men for the 50th time. What could go wrong, right? Of course, anyone who's consumed enough sci-fi knows that clones are never content with simply being clones. They inevitably attempt to assert their own humanity, and then the chores stop getting done, and there's usually a police chase and explosions, and basically chaos ensues. Which is all to say, when people talk about cloning themselves, they don't want an actual clone. What they really want is an extension of themselves, a tool, an assistant, to do the things they can't or couldn't possibly do on their own. But what would that even look like? Well, perhaps a better question to ask in a podcast is, what would that sound like? Maybe something like this? Because from the moment I said, what would that even look like? A clone of my voice took over for me. This is not the real Matthew Braga. What you're actually hearing now, instead, is an extremely uncanny clone of my voice. If I fooled you for a second there, I promise it was just to make a point. I'll let the real Matthew explain. Thanks, AI Matthew. I'll take it from here. I'm still weirded out by how much that thing sounds like me, by the way. It's hard to ignore how good these AI voices are getting and how useful this can be if used ethically. Take languages, for instance. If you're a podcaster, language has always been a limiting factor. Say I wanted to make a show in Spanish. Well, tough luck. I don't speak the language. Or French? Well, trust me, you don't want to hear me parler en français, let alone Mandarin or Dutch. You could always translate your show, but translation is expensive, time-consuming, and frankly, impractical for most podcasts. But if you do have an audience for your show that does want to listen in another language, what do you do? What if you don't have the budget or the time? Amanda Capito faced this very challenge making a podcast for one of her clients. It's how she found herself pitching a bold, maybe half-baked, and probably risky idea. I think you know where this is going.
I had been experimenting with some generative AI voice tools. And so when this decision was being made, it was just live in the moment. I didn't even sit back and think. Right? They shared the news. And I, in the moment, pitched AI. And I didn't fully know what it would really take to do this with voice generated AI. But
did you know what you were getting into?
No.
Was this? No. Amanda is not an AI engineer. She's an audio producer. She runs a company called Lead Podcasting. And when meeting with this client, she made a bet. A bet that AI voice tools could help make a podcast that was more accessible, more scalable, but still deeply human. In this episode, we follow Amanda's real-time experiment and peek behind the curtain of what it really takes to implement AI voices in creative production. I'm Matthew Braga, and this is Working Smarter, a podcast from Dropbox about how AI is changing the way we work and how we get stuff done and what we listen to. So Amanda's story really rests at the cutting edge of AI voice cloning tech. But I think what's really compelling is that she dove into this effort to help ensure the podcast that she was making could reach as many people as possible, a motivation that's deeply rooted in her values. See, Amanda was thinking about the ethics of AI voices long before it became a topic of hot discussion.
Before everybody had the ability to clone their voice like we actually can now, I actually donated my voice to a cause, and this was back in maybe 2016, and they were cloning voices to help with people who had lost their voice through illness to give them a more human-sounding voice rather than a robot-sounding voice. And so I was working in radio at the time. I had access to a studio, and you had to record all these like different sounds, like ah, ooh, ee, like this, and they prompt you. Then you had to say random sentences, and you had to get like, oh, it was something crazy, like 200 hours worth of your voice in there. And I did it over the course of a year. At the end of my shift, I recorded for a bit. So I do have a voice clone out there somewhere, and maybe someone's using my voice right now. Who knows? But that was some of the earliest forms of using this sort of technology to generate voices, and in that case, for good. And that's what I've always tried to champion, is using these kinds of tools for good.
Why is that important to you? Why does that matter?
Well, I think there's a lot of bad actors out there. And I think some of the fear that comes around things like AI adoption is around those bad actors and what that means. And that's all fair. And I think we should be aware of those risks and how we can mitigate. But if I can at least be a champion of the good, then I hope that it helps balance everything out. And hopefully the good wins, right? And so if I can role model that and exemplify how we can be using this technology for good, I do think that it ultimately will help humanity, truly. And the podcasting space is just a small corner of it, but I like to try to role model that.
Well, speaking of good, why don't we get into the podcast that you've been working on for one of your clients?
So World Vision is an international nonprofit organization that has almost 100 offices around the world, and they are focused on helping children, and specifically children in some of the toughest places, in fragile contexts, as they call it. I used to work for World Vision on their communications team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a big fan of their charitable work. I have gone out to the field to see their work firsthand. It's really, they're doing some, talking about doing good in the world, they are doing great things in this world. And after leaving the communications team and starting my company, Lead Podcasting, of course, I've stayed in touch. And now we are producing an internal podcast for them, which is meant to help connect their over 35,000 employees worldwide.
I'm familiar with podcast generally. I mean, this is an external podcast anyone can listen to. What is an internal podcast?
So internal podcasts are private shows that are shared within an organization or association, sometimes through an encrypted RSS feed, sometimes through an unlisted link. But essentially, it's meant to be a form of internal communications, which might be like a company newsletter, the company bulletin board. This is just the next iteration of communicating internally. For World Vision's case, it's with all of their employees.
Why would World Vision want to make a podcast in this case versus some of those other mechanisms you mentioned a second ago?
Well, I had been a big champion of podcasts when I was on the communications team at World Vision. Mm-hmm. So the first internal podcast I made for them was when I was working for them. And at that time, the pandemic had hit, and the main goal was knowledge mobilization. So okay. We had 100 different countries and offices, and no one could keep track of what was even happening in their own country. When was the lockdown? What's the death count? Like, there was just so many stats, let alone what's happening in 100 different other places. And so they launched an internal podcast at that time to help just inform everyone and also unite the team and make people feel less alone, especially as mm-hmm. we were in lockdown. We know podcasts did that in general. People were building parasocial relationships with the podcast host. We saw a big boom in listenership, and it provided comfort. Employees liked it. They were pitching ideas. There was a lot of beautiful moments where teams were rallying around the podcast to listen to their team member who was on it in one of their meetings. They were using
it. Lovely.
It was so nice. And we also had employees in tears who got a chance to speak to the CEO of World Vision International, and mm-hmm. hearing from somebody in Venezuela who might not even get a chance to talk to one of the national directors, let alone the CEO. Like, it made them feel so seen and valued, and it was just a great tool for them.
That's the precursor.
That was the impetus to starting it all. Yeah.
So we're talking about increasing employee engagement, which I imagine for a nonprofit with locations around the world, stuff like language and accessibility was probably a pretty big deal. How did you handle that?
So we produced the first season in 3 languages. We did it in English originally, and then we had it translated to Spanish and French. Of course, it doesn't cover off the whole world, but it did cover off a large chunk of their employee base.
Can you walk me through a little bit? Like, what does that production workflow look like when you're taking a podcast that is made in English and then translating it in other languages?
So for that first season, we did it manually and with human voice actors. And so it was quite extensive of a process, to be honest.
Okay.
So we would record the conversation in English, edit it, get it approved. Once it was locked or final, we would then have a native language speaker transcribe the whole thing and then translate mm-hmm. the whole thing.
Localize it.
That's right, with the specific nuance, and adapt it so that it still made sense if there was any you know, catchphrases used or anything like that. And then we would try to source voice actors that honored the age and general sound of the original guest to then provide that voice for that part of the episode. And we would replace the host completely with a local native language speaker. There was a lot of talent sourcing, as you can imagine, and then recording sessions and retakes. And if there was an edit, then we'd have to get them back and retake the voice acting elements, right? So it became quite the process.
What was the reception like amongst employees? Was all that hard work worth it? How did they respond to what you had made?
I think they were expecting the numbers to be higher, to be honest.
Okay.
And so it was feeling a bit disconnected for the time, energy, and investment that was going into the production compared to the response. And so there was still this desire to serve that audience. And we knew that that audience was keen to listen, but it wasn't really equaling out at the end of season one.
When it came time for the client to then renew for that second season, how did they come to that realization that they couldn't sustain this approach that they had been doing up to this point?
Yeah, it was a combination of not only finances, but also time and workflows, understanding that it was holding up the entire release process, because they'd want to release all three episodes at the same time. But there'd be such a gap between when the English one was completed versus the translated versions. And sometimes timely things would happen that would impact the content. Someone's job title changed because they got a promotion halfway through, midway through. That happened. And so now we're going back. And so it did cause some bottlenecks, some workflow issues. And so when they signed on for season two initially, they decided to drop the translated versions and just go with English.
And what was going through your mind at that point?
Well, I got it. I mean, I saw where the struggles and the roadblocks were, and was also sad because I really believed in the idea of doing it in different languages and providing that for their audiences. And I really champion accessibility, and I just thought it was a shame that we were going to have to drop the multi-language side of things, especially since we had dedicated producers on the team who were overseeing it too and who were quite passionate about the show.
So what inspired you to pitch AI as a potential solution here?
So I've always had a keen eye for innovative workflow solutions and technology and means for storytelling. I also had just finished taking a certificate course from the University of Oxford in AI for Business and feeling very inspired by the potential of AI and, quite frankly, more confident. And so I had been experimenting with some generative AI voice tools just on the side. And so when this decision was being made, it was just perfect timing that all of this happened around the same time. And so it was live in the moment. I didn't even sit back and think, right? They shared the news and I, in the moment, pitched AI, and I didn't fully know what it would really take to do this with voice generated AI, but
did you know what you were getting into?
No.
Was this? No.
I was just going with my gut. And in the moment, I was worried because also sometimes you say AI in these ways and clients will cringe. They are, some people, depending who you pitch it to, they're very against it. And I can respect that. But as soon as I said the words, I didn't see a grimace. And I saw a lean in of like, oh, tell me more. And so I started just saying what I knew, which was there's technology that can make this much easier. The workflow is going to be instantaneous. We have our local language producers on our team still that would be overseeing it and ensuring that the quality is up to par. And so I kind of just like spit out this pitch like this. And the client said, all right, well, get me a price list and a formal estimate and we'll see.
What was it about those early experiments that you were doing that maybe gave you the confidence that you could actually pitch this?
I had seen some of the work demoed at conferences for voice generation, but I had not actually tried it myself yet. but I understood the potential. I knew of 11 Labs, which was doing this sort of work. And so immediately, as soon as I got off that call, I signed up for 11 Labs and I started experimenting myself and putting my voice in just to see, okay, how easy is this and what exactly is it going to spit out? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, minute one was me getting right into it and trying to start playing around with it.
Wow. And I think we have some of that tape of you doing some of that early prototyping.
Escape to paradise with Ocean Breeze Resorts. Your dream getaway awaits. Relax, rejuvenate, and create unforgettable memories.
Can you just explain to me what's happening here?
So this was a voice ad that I had actually auditioned for that I just happened to have on my computer. So I didn't really do anything new. I was just like, what's the quickest audio file I could pull up, which happened to be that. I did not get this voice gig. So whatever, I threw it in. And I wanted to then pump out a French and a Spanish. And so I uploaded it and pretty instantaneously, it not only translated the whole thing, but then generated my voice speaking both French and Spanish.
Évadez-vous au paradis avec Ocean Breeze Resorts. Votre escapade de rêve vous attend. Détendez-vous, ressourcez-vous et créez des souvenirs inoubliables. Escápate al paraíso con Ocean Breeze Resorts. Tu escapada de ensueño te espera. Relájate, rejuvenece y crea recuerdos inolvidables.
Now, I don't speak either of these languages, and so I'm like, that sounds good to me, but I'm like, before I send this anywhere else, I brought it back to my team and I asked them, how good is this? Is this even close? Mm-hmm. And for the Spanish one, I was told that it sounds like somebody who's an American English speaker speaking Spanish. And then from what I understand, the French same, it was pretty good. There were certain words that they would have translated differently, but it was pretty good. So I just went off of that and I put together an estimate and sent those exact samples to the client as is. Mm-hmm. And off we went.
It was that easy.
I mean,
well.
I know. It feels shocking.
I'm saying that easy as if, you know, well, I mean, there's not, imagine there was quite a bit of work that came after that.
Yes. But to get the green light, I mean, I think they were also wanting to really find a solution for how they could come up with a way to not cancel these other languages. And the estimate I put together, even from a cost perspective, I didn't actually know how long it was going to take my team. So I was just like making stuff up as I went along, but I purposely tried to give them a good deal to make it worth trying, even just for the sake of doing it, right? And so, I mean, I guess that's the entrepreneur in me of like, get her done, figure it out later, and try to sell whatever you can.
So at this point, even having tested the idea out a little bit, did you know what you were getting into?
No. I went to my team saying we're going to use 11 Labs. They were like, oh, but there's other ones. We didn't test other ones. I said, you know, we got to go, actually. We got to start producing like ASAP. So like
yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we had to play catch up. We had already started that next season in English. So we had to hop too. And so I took note of all their suggestions and said, we can look at this later as we maybe expand this as an offering. But for now, we're using 11 Labs. And part of it was also to come up with a privacy disclaimer and a permission form for guests to sign off on.
Okay.
And so I had already done that legwork using the 11 Labs terms and conditions and privacy policy. So that's why I was really, from the jump, we couldn't really deviate. And so we ended up putting a disclaimer on the episodes. That was one piece to say, we're going to call out that this is generated with AI. Mm-hmm. We're going to point to the exact AI that we're using, so there's no questions around that. And the other thing that helped soften it was that we kept the human hosts. So we were pitching this as the guests only. And so it was a hybrid approach. We're still going to have that same host that would have done it. It's the people who are on our team. It's a familiar voice. So that made it a little more palatable as well.
Why was it so important to you to be so transparent about the tool that you use, the fact that any of this was AI generated, like why did that matter?
I believe in transparency. And so this is aligned with my personal morals. But also as I navigate this world of AI, I think there is a little worry that something might happen that's completely out of my control with the tool that I'm using. I could sign off saying I promise not to do anything else and I'm not going to generate anything other than this podcast with this new voice, but I have to share where I'm uploading it to, because ultimately if those privacy or terms and conditions change, that's out of my control.
Right.
And so I just wanted that to be all on the record.
Working Smarter is brought to you by Dropbox Dash, the universal search and knowledge management tool from Dropbox. With Dash, you can quickly search across files, images, videos, and more. That's because Dash connects all the apps you and your team already use, like Canva, Jira, Microsoft 365, to give you a central hub for company content. Once you find what you're looking for, AI-powered writing and organization capabilities help you draft, summarize, and share your work. All from one place. And with comprehensive access controls, you can trust that people will only see the content they're supposed to, so you and your team can move faster, collaborate more securely, and focus on the work that matters most. To learn more about Dropbox Dash and discover a more enlightened way of working, visit workingsmarter.ai/dash. So you've pitched this idea to the client, you have this tool, you are ready to create an AI-generated version of this podcast in a couple of different languages. How does this process actually play out? Like, can you walk me through how this changes your creative process?
Yeah, and it's still iterating as we speak. But
okay.
What happened was I now have to do a training module for my team on 11 Labs, which I've barely used myself. But I get everybody on a call and kudos to my team, who's just so willing to roll with things. And I'm like, we're doing it this way now. And they're like, yep, we're in. Let's go. Let's figure it out together. And it was 3 episodes that they signed on for. So it was like a nice test. So I said, it's 3 episodes. We're testing it out. Keep me posted. How many hours does it take you? Where are the hiccups that come up when you're putting longer pieces of audio in there, right? Mine was so short. It was like 20 seconds. Now we're doing half an hour episodes. So does it break down? Like, what happened? So I wanted to open up the lines of communication on their workflow. But essentially, you can choose one of 2 ways to generate a voice. You can either create a new voice profile that matches the audio that you are putting in. So it's similar to what you heard. That was my voice. Or you could go to their database of voices and choose a pre-established voice that sounds as similar, like you could find a similar one to the guest. So in the beginning, we started with generating new voice profiles to just really match the guest. And so what would happen is it would translate it and generate it all right away. We also noticed that the translations were not to the level we needed them to be. So originally we were going to just pump it all out and give it to them to listen to. But what we realized was we needed to have a step in between for tweaking the actual way it was translated. And then we started creating the voice profiles to submit. But by episode 2, we decided it was actually faster and better to use the database voices instead of generating a new voice profile. There was more consistency, flexibility, and creative control using a pre-established voice.
You know, I'm hearing you describe all of the steps that you've kind of gone through and all of the, I guess, the wrangling that you're doing with this tool. And it makes me wonder whether there was ever a point in this process where you or your team were, you know, banging your heads against the wall and almost regretting the assignment. Like, were there points like that? Did it get intense? Were you questioning your life decisions at any point along the way?
Definitely. Yeah, the whole time. I mean, reality is that I didn't account for the amount of time it was going to take to fix the translation.
Interesting.
So there was a disconnect where I feel I didn't estimate accurately how much time that would take and how much I should be paying my team and how much I should be charging the client ultimately. So that was a gap I had to, you know, I had to eat that. And there was definitely time when we were trying to still work with the new voice profile building that there was a lot of frustration, hence why we ended up switching tactics. But I gave real power to the team. I wasn't trying to micromanage this. I wouldn't even know what to say to the team. So I just said, go with your gut, do what you think sounds best, because they were getting nuanced with the accent and which Spanish accent. Is it a Colombian accent or a Venezuelan accent, right? And so being able to make sure we were honoring it as closely as possible, and they were able to do that better with the pre-established ones. And so I thought, okay, no brainer.
Wow. What you were describing does sound like a lot of this process still required a significant amount of human involvement.
For sure. Especially when it comes to the nuance with something like translation and language and accent, that is deeply personal, deeply human. And that human oversight was important. And so that's why the key point people on my team who were running the show before were all still there doing their thing. Mm-hmm. And we were able to just change what their job involved. So it was an adjustment to their tasks. But once we got over the learning curve, the workflow was more seamless, but definitely lots of human fingerprints all over it.
Well, and I just want to dig into that for 1 second. I mean, why did you feel that it was important to maintain that degree of human involvement in the process?
Well, number one, I think if you zoom out, North American audiences are not really ready for robot voices. And there is a social disdain generally towards them right now. But if you look globally, if you go and look in Asia, there are lots of AI-generated celebrities, influencers, singers that are filling stadiums. So they're already, they're in a little bit of a different social acceptance zone. But I knew based on where we were, having the hybrid approach from a voice perspective of like what is actually coming out of the speakers, I thought it was a important way to bridge where we're at to where we're going. From a content agency perspective, it's hugely important to still have that human oversight. That's going to be what allows us to create the excellent content. And so I don't ever see that going away. We're always going to have that human oversight in order to ensure we are getting what we want from this tool. It ended up being so good that when we delivered the first episode, the client said, oh, but I thought you were using AI for these. She thought it was human. And we're like, we did. So to me, that means it was a success.
So they had no idea. If you hadn't told them, they would have had no idea.
They were confused. Yeah. They thought we got another voice actor.
Well, and I imagine that one of the things that tool isn't going to bring is it's not going to bring the instincts or the experience or all of the other knowledge that you've brought from all of the other clients that you've worked with in the past. Do you think that that's what's going to set you apart from people who are maybe just coming at this and thinking, well, I can just like plug a transcript into a voice generator and make a podcast?
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it. That's it. Any person can go clickety-clack some buttons and pump out a whole thing and not have that, you know, that level of oversight and care. You can't replicate that.
How did you and your team feel about the exercise once things were all said and done?
The team was very, for the most part, excited that we were trying something new and that we were pushing the boundaries in the audio industry. And that came from me too. Like I was speaking about it at conferences and I'm on this podcast and like there is this like buzz around that. And I think there is an excitement about innovating and new and, you know, being on the cutting edge in an industry that is so quickly evolving. That's not without frustration, you know, to call a spade a spade. They were upset at some points when they were hitting roadblocks. But I think that comes with any learning. That's indicative of growth. And now that we're on the other side of it, I think there is a lot of pride in what we were able to produce.
It does sound like adapting and working with AI tools became like a new layer of effort for you and your team. What about the cost of that?
I do believe that that time is an investment into growth of the business and growth of the individual producers. And so it was worth it in my eyes as a CEO of a production company, because now we know exactly what it takes. Mm-hmm. We can confidently put together estimates and speak in a very grounded sense when talking to clients about what exactly happens once we take it over to the tool. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind that we had to spend a little bit of time figuring some things out. I think that's just par for the course.
Totally, part of the process. Mm-hmm. Where do you land on the usage of AI more broadly in the podcasting space?
Well, I really believe it's going to help with globalizing podcasts. Like if you're asking me from an industry, that's my, you know, that's one of the good news stories that's going to come out of all of this. I think it's going to be a click of a button that on the back end of your hosting site, you could choose which languages you want to put it out in and then bingo, bango, it's out. And that's great because there's so many incredible Spanish podcasts that I don't understand and vice versa, English podcasts that aren't able to make it to countries where maybe they don't have the ability to learn English and they'd really learn something from listening to some of these shows that people are so carefully crafting. And so I think that globalization of content and really seeing what is the number one podcast, like truly what is the number one, because right now it's skewed. It's not accurate. We know which one is the number one in English. And
that is such a fascinating thing to think about.
Right. And then from a production side, I think that editing, like the simple editing, is going to be made even simpler. Like the cleanup edit, as we call it in the industry, just taking out some of the beginning, you know, or some sneezes and some false starts and the beginning ramblings. You know, right now, there's so many people who want to make a podcast, but don't have the access to the tools to be able to even just do that. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be made really easy. So if some editor out there has hinged their entire career on doing that kind of editing, what I would say is look around, acknowledge that that's coming. Mm-hmm. So how can you really upskill yourself and continue to, the jobs will change, like, but how can you carve out a new role for yourself that still might have to do with editing, but is not going to be these cleanup edits? It's just going to look a little differently. We've gone through this before. Social media, we did not have any jobs that had social media. Mm-hmm. Now we have entire teams dedicated to social media. And yes, maybe there was other jobs that were eliminated, but new jobs came in. And so ultimately, I just think there's going to be a shift in the kinds of jobs there are in the podcast industry.
Well, and we're talking a little bit more broadly there, but I want to come back to the AI voice generated example specifically. Do you worry or think that leaning too much on something like AI voice generation takes something away from podcasting or from the people who work in the space?
I mean, if you ask an artist that, they're going to be like, yes, it's the dying art. And I get it, because I'm an artist at heart too. But if you were to ask the photographer who was in the dark room dipping their film in a bunch of different chemicals and say, we got a digital camera for you. And they're like, no, it's ruining the art of the dark room. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know how this story ends. So yeah, there's a little bit of a boohoo. And yeah, there's going to be an art that we're going to like call back on, which will be nice and nostalgic. Just like we call back on literally cutting tape, we will call back on the time where we had to manually do all of this. But this is just the evolution of technology. And there will be a new art that emerges that I would encourage people to be open to exploring.
Well, that's a good place to leave it. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Amanda Capito, the founder of Leap Podcasting, audio producer, and now AI voice cloning super user. She's in Toronto. I'm Matthew Braga, still Matthew Braga, and not a clone. And to be clear, this show isn't going to adopt a voice clone or an AI agent to host this podcast. But since this episode is literally talking about AI and podcasting, I thought you might be curious to know if we use any kind of AI to make the show. Well, our show producer, Dominic Girard, does in fact lean on generative AI to help him make Working Smarter. Isn't that right, Dom?
Yeah, it is. I mean, by definition, I probably should be playing with AI if we're doing a show about AI in the workplace. So I started doing that from the beginning. Even when I pre-interview a guest who might be on the show, I let AI take all the notes for me so I can focus and have a conversation with a potential guest. Then it turns out the notes are actually really quite robust. You've seen them. I put them in the background when you prepare for an interview. Mm-hmm. It does a really great job of getting that busy work of taking notes out of the way. And it lets me focus on, can this guest tell a good story, and do we want them on the show?
Yeah, I as we're learning in this show, there are a lot of different possible use cases here. I know for me, AI often feels like having something like a personal assistant, whereas I think you've described your experience as being more like having a really competent intern. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. I thought about this a lot, and I think the word intern is the one that like tickles me the most, because if you're in audio production and you've got a really smart intern, right, they kind of get the fundamentals. They know what it needs to do, but they don't quite have that experience yet, right? If they were a real person. So their creativity isn't going to be fully fleshed out. I frame it that way when I think about all the AI tools I use and the research and writing question lines and writing scripts, that this intern will give me something useful to work from, but I'm the one, the human, I'm the one who has to bring it over the line, who makes it a real story, who makes it something engaging and fun. And so, yeah, that's why I think everyone should think of AI as some kind of intern.
Which is kind of nice, because it means that you're never really staring at a blank screen, right?
Yeah, exactly, which is the bane of my entire career, right? I can get rid of that because it puts something up. It might be garbage, actually. Sometimes it can be, but at least it gives me something to look at, point at, agree or disagree with, and then off I go. And that's what it is.
Do you ever worry that AI is maybe doing too much of your job?
No, but I think what's important about that is I don't let it, and I won't let it, right? And again, to use the intern analogy, I don't think I've ever heard of a successful case where an intern has run an entire show on their own. So I'm certainly not going to let the AI intern do that either for this show. But that's just me, Matt. I know that you are also leaning into AI tools at work. You're doing all kinds of things at Dropbox, so maybe you can talk a bit about how you're bringing these tools in.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you allude to, like this podcast, I love doing it, but it's not my only job at Dropbox. And so
I have
all these projects. I mean, as much as I wish it was, no, I have other projects I'm working on. I have other docs that I'm working on. I have all these things that I'm kind of bouncing between during the day. And so perhaps unsurprisingly, I mean, one of the tools that I do legitimately use pretty much daily is Dropbox Dash.
Yeah.
And I know this sounds like product placement, but I really do use it all the time. You know, it helps me quickly find the scripts for these episodes, the audio, the mix downs, the episode art, the conversations we've had, like everything that I need to make this show. It really helps me find that stuff and also keep it all organized, you know, amid all the other stuff I'm doing, which is pretty great.
And I've noticed because I just keep throwing all kinds of stuff at you all day long.
And somehow I am able to stay on top of it.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Dom. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Thinking back to Amanda's story, I think what sticks out for me is how she used AI not merely to replace the human voice, like she wasn't just doing this because she could, but to extend the human reach of the show she was making. Driven by her desire to do good, she pushed herself, her team, and her client to try something novel, all to ensure that World Vision's global staff could continue to be served by their podcast. And she did it all transparently and openly, making sure that listeners knew what was real and what was AI. Signing up for that project meant that Amanda's team had to adapt how they work and redefine their processes on the fly. Not perfectly, not painlessly, but with purpose. For Amanda, working smarter means using AI to enhance her craft, not rob her of it, and to amplify her team's creative skills and instincts. Working Smarter is brought to you by Dropbox Dash, universal search and knowledge management from Dropbox. Find anything and protect everything with Dropbox Dash. Find more episodes of Working Smarter on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And find more interviews like this one on our website, workingsmarter.ai. This show would not be possible without... Actually, you know what? Just for fun and just this once... Why don't we cheat a bit and let my AI voice clone read out the credits for me? I'm the real Matthew Braga. Over to you, clone. This show would not be possible without the talented team at Cosmic Standard, producer Dominic Girard, sound engineer Asia Simpson, technical director Jacob Winnick, and executive producer Eliza Smith. Special thanks to our illustrators, Fanny Lure and Justin Tran, and to Katie Keck for editorial support. Our theme song was composed by Doug Stewart, and I'm Matthew Braga's voice clone. Thanks for listening.